The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. He is in Israel right now with your regular producer, Sam Livingston, as well. They've both travelled over there for the weekend. I think they'll be probably back in the studio on Tuesday, all being well. So a relatively quick trip, though I'm sure he'll tell you all about that when he gets back. Today, though, we've got lots of exciting features, news coming up. We might later in the show, if we have a chance, talk about Europe and Israel. We're going to do the feedback on the show. This is the first time for me. Mr. Flurry has passed on to me some of your feedback, so I'll get to read that out. And we've got, again, some, as usual, some very interesting comments. Comments from all the way around the world. Comments from Germany. Comments from Peru. Feedback from Canada. From various different parts of the US. So we'll get to that at the end of the show. But for the big story today, well, you can't really get much bigger than what we're going to talk about for our main story. Doomsday. The end of the world. Nuclear annihilation. A pretty sobering subject, but it's one that's just been in the news a huge amount over the last couple of days. We're just going to look at some stories that come only from yesterday. One day in the news, but we'll look at some reports from that one day. And, you know, I've been working in the news bureau and here at the Trumpet for somewhere around 10 years now, and I don't know whether I have seen such dramatic quotes, such dramatic talk of the end of the world, of nuclear war, from such mainstream sources as we have right now. Kind of even in some ways, some lefty sources, some of the types of papers that normally talk about, well, human nature is better and we're beyond the dangers of war. You know, now they're talking about nuclear war. So a sobering subject, a very important one nonetheless. Now, one of the biggest pieces of news on this comes from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. They maintain the doomsday clock, this symbolic clock of showing how close we are to nuclear destruction. And they moved it forwards by 30 seconds yesterday to 2 minutes to midnight. Here's a clip of the press conference as they announced that decision.
This was with reference to what I said earlier and other key factors that are spelled out in our clock statement that we've come to a grim assessment. It is with considerable concern that we set the time of the 2018 doomsday clock and offer a plea to rewind the doomsday clock. As of today, it is 2 minutes to midnight. Bob, let me turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. There is unfortunately little doubt but that the risk of nuclear weapons may be used intentionally or because of miscalculation grew last year around the globe. We're seeing that all of the major weapon states are investing in their nuclear arsenals. North Korea's nuclear and missile tests demonstrated an accelerating and successful program of building a new generation of massive weapons of mass destruction. In South Asia, the emphasis on nuclear and missile capabilities grows. Conventional force imbalances and destabilizing plans for nuclear weapons use early in any conflict continue to plague the subcontinent. The nuclear arsenals of all of the major weapon states are being updated and imbued with enhanced capabilities. Trump administration's nuclear posture review appears likely to increase the types and roles.
So we're looking at more nuclear weapons, nuclear arsenals around the world being upgraded, being modernized. We're looking at just all of these different danger zones that you heard on that clip. And 2 minutes to midnight is a pretty momentous announcement. This is the closest that the nuclear countdown has come to doomsday in 65 years. So they're basically saying we are closer to doomsday now than we were at the height of the Cold War. The Lawrence M. Krauss and Robert Rosner, they wrote that the world is not only more dangerous now than it was a year ago, it is as threatening as it has been since World War II. So it's now at the giant highest level, this doomsday clock, that it has been ever since they've been maintaining it. The clock was set up in 1947, and it's meant to represent the likelihood of mankind beginning a nuclear war, with midnight being the end of mankind, or global destruction. Now, in 1991, it was at the furthest that they've ever had it from midnight, at 17 minutes to midnight. And the only other time that it's been at 2 minutes to midnight was all the way back in 1953. And that was after announcements that America and Russia had tested nuclear devices within a year of each other. So now, once again, we're back to 11:58, 2 minutes to midnight. These two scientists, again, they wrote that the doomsday clock is as close to midnight today as it was in 1953, when Cold War fears perhaps reached their highest levels. Then the head of the atomic, or the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, Rachel Bronson, she said, to call the situation dire is to understate the danger and its immediacy. So a very dangerous situation. The Bulletin in their report, they said the greatest risks last year arose in the nuclear realm. And so they talked about a number of different places. One of the big ones they mentioned was North Korea, with just the rapid ramp up in armaments that it had last year, and how quickly their nuclear weapons are coming on, creating more risks for North Korea, for other regions, other countries. I mean, more risks for the United States, for other countries in the region. But not just North Korea. They talked about the United States and Russia, and how they're upgrading their arsenals. How, I mean, they didn't put it this way, but basically Russia is really leading the way and reneging on arms control treaties, going back on some of the disarmament that the two sides agreed to in the 1980s. They're rearming. Then they also pointed to tensions in the South China Sea. And we've seen more of those just over the last week or so, with China making a big deal about America doing a sail path in the Scarborough Shoals. They talked about Pakistan and India building ever larger arsenals of nuclear weapons. And then you've got Iran as well. They pointed to that. But then they also said that there was a breakdown in the international order, that the United States was backing away from the world, and that was making the world more dangerous. And that's a common theme that you'll see as we read more and more of these. But you're seeing all of this instability around the world growing. Nuclear instability. And this doomsday clock, this is something that both Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Flurry wrote about as it was upgraded, as they made their changes. Back in 2002, they moved it from 9 minutes to midnight to 7 minutes to midnight, which seems quite far off now compared to where we are with 2 minutes to midnight. But Mr. Flurry, back then, he wrote, the world should have jolted out of sleep at the news. Headlines should have splashed across all the media, but no real alarm was sounded. The majority of the news media dismissed it, and many still slumber on as the world heads towards world destruction. But that was all the way back in 2002. He wrote about it again when it was moved forwards quite significantly in 2007. But Mr. Armstrong also wrote, he also talked about this. Here's a clip from him talking about this doomsday clock as it was back in 1984. This is clip two.
Well, brethren, we need to realize the time that we're living in. The condition today is serious. In the news now, we're hearing about a nuclear winter, a nuclear war, and Bible prophecy says one is coming, and all indications are that it's going to come sooner than we think, that it would create a vast cloud to cover the whole Earth and to virtually shut out the sun until it would be a nuclear winter. It would be impossible to raise crops or food. Not only are all prognostications that perhaps anywhere from 1.5 billion up to 2 or 3 billion people would be killed by the first nuclear explosions, but soon it would be impossible to raise food. And it would very shortly and very quickly mean erasing all humanity from this earth. Now, it's been several months since we had the report that the nuclear scientists have set the doomsday clock forward 1 minute. I've mentioned this a number of times on the air. I've mentioned it here before. From 4 to only 3 minutes to midnight. At midnight is the doom. That's the end of civilization as we know it. I think we're living carelessly, brethren.
So are we really aware of the time that we're living in, he was talking about there? And now back then, we know there was a time of delay. The clock was moved back after the Cold War ended, all the way back to 17 minutes to midnight. But now we're in a time of no more delay, with world events moving quickly, and that doomsday clock is back as close to midnight as it has ever been in history. And this isn't the only article from the last few days talking about this. Here's one. There's one from Stratfor. And this is called The New Nuclear Age, A Journey into the Unknown. A New Nuclear Age. And again, this is Stratfor. Stratfor is normally, you know, they're a very sober, serious publication published by academics. You know, they kind of avoid exaggeration or sensationalist claims. But really, some of what they say here is quite sensational. And as Mr. Armstrong said at the start of that clip, well, we need to realize the time that we're living in. And you hear almost the same words in some of this from Stratfor. This article, I think it was by Ian Morris, he talks about how his wife went to Hawaii last week, and obviously you had that very famous text that went out by mistake, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. Now, he mentioned that his wife just missed that. Everyone was on the plane and had their phones all turned off to airplane mode, so they didn't receive that text. But he goes on to write about that, and he writes, the incident was hardly the first false alarm since the Cold War ended in 1989. Human error and machine malfunction will always be with us. But for almost 30 years, no warning of a missile attack on the United States was ever even very plausible. The alert on January 13th, by contrast, was extremely plausible. Commuters on their way to work pulled over to make final phone calls to loved ones. Parents reportedly tried to hide their children in sewers. So, as you write, you know, if this had happened, say, maybe even 5, 10 years earlier, well, a lot of people may have just thought, okay, well, it's a mistake. But now it's very plausible, very imaginable. He writes, the age of innocence is over. Americans once again live in a world where death can descend from the skies with just a few minutes' notice. And he goes on to make some great points here just about international relations, even in general. He says, one of the most popular myths of our recent age of innocence was that a rule-based international order had taken such deep roots that no states would ever again consider the first use of force to be legitimate. In some circles, dissent from this orthodoxy had become unthinkable. To become unthinkable, this assumption, and you do see this everywhere, that, oh, okay, well, you can't, you know, no state would ever again use force. You couldn't have a major power use force, use a military, go and invade somewhere. It's taken such that so many people just think that, to the point that any kind of war involving major powers is just unthinkable. Now, Ferguson, he also had a great piece over the last couple of days. I think it was published in one of the Chinese government papers. I don't know whether he originally wrote it for them or whether they just borrowed it, as the Chinese government are wont to do. But he was talking about this idea that there was a liberal international order that was set up after World War II in a way that international politics is completely different to how it's ever been in human history, and now there are no more wars. He talked about that's nonsense, that international politics hasn't changed. And really, you look at history, and man has constantly thought that he has gotten over war, that he solved the problem of war. And he thinks that when the next war is just right around the corner. But going back to this Stratfor article, Ian Morris writes that he discovered this when a TV interviewer, he says, asked me about Russian President Vladimir Putin's then recent annexation of Crimea. Rather than agreeing that it was the act of a madman, I suggested that it was simply the kind of thing rulers have always done, and that the only surprising thing about Putin's action was that Western governments hadn't expected it. A stunned silence followed. I think the interviewer was embarrassed on my behalf. So to too many, it's become unthinkable that that kind of thing could happen, and then in Crimea, it did. A major leader from a major world power did just unilaterally use force to change the borders in Europe. He does talk about how that there have been there have been fewer massive wars. I mean, there's obviously still been a lot of wars that have been going on fighting. But he writes that, well, he talks about how just one person in 150 has died violently today, which is half the rate of violent death compared to the 20th century. So much fewer people dying, but he says, doesn't mean the world is a safer place or that we've outgrown violence? He says, no, it says that since 1945, most governments, most of the time, have concluded that in the geostrategic balance, the cost of using force outweighs the benefits. That balance is changing. That is why the Hawaiian missile crisis seemed believable. So the only reason we haven't had massive wars over the last 50, 60, 70 years is just that it's not been in nations' self-interests to have these massive wars. And a big part of the reason, as he gets on to talk about, is the United States. Pax Americana. America preserving that peace, and that era is ending. He recounts that some of the history of the developments of nuclear weapons, how you had the invention of a bomb that could destroy entire cities, small cities, with a single weapon. Then in 1952, the invention of the thermonuclear hydrogen bombs with blast equivalent to millions of metric tons of TNT made destroying entire nations imaginable. So before then, nobody could have imagined, he's saying, really, the destruction of entire nations. Now we're in that time. The Soviet Union launched its first intercontinental ballistic missile in 1958. The United States followed suit the next year. By 1960, the two rivals had mastered missile launches from submarines. In the early 1960s, American war games indicated that a U.S. first strike would kill 100 million Russians and bring the Soviet Union down. The only catch was that a Soviet counterstrike would then kill 75 million Americans and 115 million Europeans, bringing down the rest of the Northern Hemisphere too. The age of mutually assured destruction had arrived. And that's the age we live in. We tend to ignore it. Now, I ignore it. Just kind of looking over these sound bites from Mr. Armstrong and looking at trying to find some of these, put together a quote from him from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And you listen to what he was saying. You know, even as he said in that quote we heard, we need to realize the time of the things, the time that we live in. I think we're living carelessly. You know, looking over those this morning, I was forced to think, well, how differently would I live my life if I was much more aware of this reality? Really, every day would be different. But it is reality, as much as we just tend not to think about it. He then talks about how the likely cost of war, should it occur, steadily rose as nuclear arsenals got bigger and deadlier. By the early 1980s, when there were over 70,000 warheads in the world, all-out war may well have ended all life. All life. And that's something we'll come back to towards the end of this segment. But the fact that we haven't had this, well, I'll just read from what he says. He said, for a quarter of a century, the U.S. global dominance raised the price of going to war without its approval to a level that only someone as audacious as longtime Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein would risk paying. So generally, the United States played the role of a peacemaker, preventing nations from going to war. Saddam Hussein tried to defy that, invaded Kuwait in the early 90s, and America stopped him. NATO stopped him. So we've had this Pax Americana. People have known if they want to go and start these wars, well, America would have something to say about it. And America will come and stop them. Now, of course, there were times of weakness. There were things like the breakup of Yugoslavia, where America helped with that. But that power was there, keeping the world relatively peaceful. And now, he talks about it in the Stratford article, this is changing. The world has to wake up from even the happiest dreams, Ian Morris writes. Over the past decade, the arrangement has changed. The cost-benefit calculations that had for so long made missile launches unimaginable have been transformed. And the first way he talks about it is how now more and more countries can go nuclear. It used to be during the Cold War that only a few countries had the relevant technology, the wealth, the resources to develop a nuclear bomb. That's changed. Now there's dozens of countries, he writes, that have enough money and scientific ability to make the question one worth thinking about. So now you can have nations like Iran, like North Korea, going for a nuclear bomb. And you're seeing more and more nations go down that route, like Pakistan, India. And then if these nations get the bomb, he talks about how this could change even further. North Korea's nuclear program might yet change the terms of the equation enough for Japan and South Korea to go nuclear. And should Iran eventually break out into nuclear territory, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt could decide to join it. An Asian continent crowded with nuclear-armed states is a terrifying prospect. But note this, some strategists now worry that if governments in Europe grow significantly worried about the reliability of American nuclear support against Russian revanchism, the continent could soon become a more dangerous place than it was even in 1914. So he's warning about Europe going nuclear and saying, well, Europe could soon become more dangerous than it was before World War I. That's quite the statement. Again, from Stratfor. Now, what he doesn't mention here is that Europe already has a lot of nuclear weapons in the form of American bombs on their bases that they can launch on their planes. But then he also points now to the role of the United States. We should perhaps not be too surprised that the United States' unprecedented full-spectrum military dominance is now eroding. After all, the British Empire, the closest thing to a global cop the world had ever seen before 1991, followed a similar trajectory. Both the United Kingdom and the US prospered by wielding an invisible fist that guaranteed the function of a global system of free trade, only to find that as their trading partners prospered, it became harder and harder for them to maintain their ascendancy. In the case of the British Empire, the story ended badly. By 1890, revisionist governments, above all Germany, we're increasingly concluding that the global cop could not police its beat and that the potential costs of using force were falling below the potential benefits. The result was the First World War. And he's saying, well, we're seeing the same pattern that led to the decline of Britain in the First World War is happening again. America is declining. America has been there making the cost of war really high. People have not wanted to try any kind of nuclear war because they believed, well, the United States is so powerful, they'll just annihilate us. But that is over. And so now he's saying, well, people are going to start thinking about trying, thinking about, well, America's weak. We could gain a lot by bringing them down. It's worth the risk. He says that, of course, there's differences between the situations. But then he says, in some ways, though, the divergence makes the situation look even more alarming. Unlike British governments in the quarter century leading up to World War I, recent US governments have seemed positively eager to send the message that the global COP is faltering. This has been one of the few areas of bipartisan agreement in Washington lately. Whether by publicly questioning long-standing alliances in Europe and Northeast Asia or by backing down from a red line in the Syrian civil war, successive administrations have disconcerted U.S. allies and emboldened its enemies. Shutting down the government, flirting with the default on the national debt, and tearing up international agreements hardly inspired confidence in the country abroad. So America, in a lot of ways, is destroying itself, making it obvious to the world that this is a declining power. He writes, now all the calculations of costs and benefit are in disarray. Who knows anymore whether violent actions might not pay off? And if you take a realistic view of human nature is evil. Human nature is selfish above all else, self-interested. Everybody's human nature, every nation's human nature. Well, there's nations going to be looking at, well, can we benefit? Can we benefit from these violent actions? We're entering a new world, he writes, of risk-taking and adventurism. Perhaps the only thing we can be sure of is that more of us will be taking trips like my wife's, uncertain of whether the world will still be there when we reach our destination. That's the only thing that we can be certain of. There are going to be more and more of these nuclear scares. That's quite a shocking conclusion from, again, Stratfor. And here's another one. This is from The Economist. If anything, say, more, sober and unprone to exaggeration than Stratfor. In fact, The Economist is really one of those quite left-wing publications that's much more into the idea that human nature has improved, that we've evolved beyond the challenges of war and conflict. And you can see that even they're now starting to question that. And this is also published yesterday. The next war, the growing danger of great power conflict. The next war, they write, in the past 25 years, war has claimed too many lives. Yet even as civil and religious strife has raged in Syria and Central Africa, Afghanistan and Iraq, a devastating clash between the world's great powers has remained almost unimaginable. And as I said, they're one of the more left-wing ones that kind of take this view that we've evolved beyond war. Human nature is better now. So you can see why it would be almost unimaginable to them. But then they say no longer. It's no longer unimaginable. Last week, the Pentagon issued a new national defense strategy that put China and Russia above jihadism as the main threat to America. This week, the chief of Britain's general staff warned of a Russian attack. Even now, America and North Korea are perilously close to a conflict that risks dragging in China or escalating into nuclear catastrophe. As our special report this week on the future of war argues, powerful long-term shifts in geopolitics and the proliferation of new technologies are eroding the extraordinary military dominance that America and its allies have enjoyed. So there's been this time of extraordinary American dominance, and it's over. All right, conflict on a scale and intensity not seen since the Second World War is once again plausible. The world is not prepared. And as I said, those last two sentences, they weren't from me. That was from The Economist. Stunning statements, almost like Mr. Armstrong. The world is not prepared. Mr. Armstrong saying, we need to realize the time that we're living in. I think we're living carelessly. They begin by talking about the dangers of war in North Korea. Then they go on to write, even if China stayed out of a second Korea war, both it and Russia are entering into a renewal of great power competition with the West. Their ambitions will be even harder to deal with than North Korea's. So it's not just one rogue nation. It's a much bigger problem than that. 3 decades of unprecedented economic growth have provided China with the wealth to transform its armed forces and given its leaders the sense that their moment has come. Russia, paradoxically, needs to assert itself now because it is in long-term decline. Its leaders have spent heavily to restore Russia's hard power, and they're willing to take risks to prove they deserve respect and a seat at the table. Talks about how these powers are revisionist states that want to challenge the status quo. They look at their region as spheres of influence to be dominated. For China, that means East Asia. For Russia, Eastern Europe and Central Asia. So these are rising powers that want to challenge the United States. China, they write, aims to push American naval forces far out into the Pacific, where they can no longer safely project power into the East and South China Seas. Russia wants the world to know that from the Arctic to the Black Sea, it can call on greater firepower than its foes, and that it will not hesitate to do so. If America allows China and Russia to establish regional hegemonies, either consciously or because its politics are too dysfunctional to muster a response, it will have given them a green light to pursue their interests by brute force. When that was last tried, the result was the First World War. So again, another article saying we're looking at a danger that we've not seen since the First World War. And then it talks about nuclear weapons. Not only do you have the worry of nations using nuclear weapons, but they also make the point that nuclear command and control systems are becoming vulnerable to hacking by new cyber weapons or the blinding of satellites they depend on. A country under such an attack could find itself under pressure to choose between losing control of its nuclear weapons or using them. So could America lose even the use of its nuclear weapons by hacking, by nations taking out its satellites? Well, we don't have time to get into it today, but there are Bible prophecies that certainly make it look like that, that talk about exactly that kind of thing. And it says 20 years of strategic drift has played into the hands of Russia and China. They note that the best guarantor of world peace is a strong America. And remember, this is a British publication. You know, just as a quick side point, I do regularly get emails from people saying things like, you at the Trumpet should be cheering the fall of America. They're an evil power. They're a greedy power, a selfish power. They're a militaristic, a warmongering power. They do this and that. You know, they've invaded here and here. And I'm always kind of tempted to write back and say, just you wait. You know, if you think America is an evil power or a warmongering power, just wait till they're not top dog anymore. Or very clearly not top dog anymore. I think you can make an argument that that position is sliding or slipped already, but just wait till that's obvious. Then you'll see what a real warmongering power looks like. And you long for the days of an American hegemony. Now, I don't say that. Those people that write these emails, they're often, as you read them, they're into conspiracy theories and, you know, America being behind 9/11 and all of this kind of thing. And, you know, I think once you're at that point, they're beyond a point where they can be reached by reason and logic. Your mind has to be so warped just to kind of believe those things. So trying to persuade them would be a waste of time. But going back to this article, the best guarantor of world peace is a strong America. Fortunately, it still enjoys advantages. And it talks about some of those. And they're right. America still has a lot of advantages, a lot of blessings, really, from God. But it writes that yet those advantages could all too easily be squandered. And that's exactly what we're seeing. Without America's commitment to the international order and hard power to defend it against determined and able challengers, the dangers will grow. If they do, the future of war could be closer than you think. So that's how they conclude their article. The future of war could be closer than you think. The dangers are growing. So those are some sobering warnings, but they're sobering warnings echoed by the Bible. And we read from the Stratfor piece where it said, well, you know, until 1953 or whenever it was, the weapons that could destroy or the destruction of entire countries, well, that was unimaginable. Well, the Bible actually talks frequently about exactly that. And that's something we need to know about because understanding that this was forecast by the Bible is the only way that we can get hope in this really sobering subject. And I think that's why people don't want to talk about this. Why things like the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists making those announcements doesn't get the press or the attention that it really should. Because people see no hope in this subject, and so they'd just rather not think about it. But there is hope. There is hope there. Because the Bible talked about this 2,000 years ago. I mean, talk about nuclear weapons being unimaginable before 1952 or the destruction of entire countries before 1952. The Bible talked about that 2,000 years ago. Matthew 24 and verse 22, Jesus Christ himself says, "And except those days should be shortened, no flesh should be saved alive." Now, the King James Version says should be saved. But it's clear when you look at that verse, it's not talking about salvation or spiritual salvation. It's talking about being saved alive. Just to read some other translations rather than simply the King James, just to... There we go, pages are sticking together. Moffat translation. Had those days not been cut short, not a soul would be saved alive. Yet if those days... Phillips translation. Yet if those days had not been cut short, no human being would survive. That's what this is really talking about. The New English Bible. If those times of troubles were not cut short, no living thing could survive. That's what Jesus Christ was saying 2,000 years ago. And how extreme would that have seemed all the way back then? Yet here we are now, 2 minutes to midnight. And there are a lot of prophecies that talk about this. Back in April, Mr. Flurry, trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry, gave a Key of David program called Matthew 24. And he spoke at length in that program about this subject. And you know, he spoke about some of the nuclear dangers we face. We'll hear a clip from that about the nuclear dangers that we're facing now. And this is clip three.
But look at this world. Korea is only one of many nuclear powers, and they share their nuclear arsenal with Iran, which is the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world, led by, some very unstable leaders. What is this time that we're entering into, called the times of the Gentiles in the Bible? Daniel called this the crisis of crises. This is the crisis of man's history on this earth. The crisis. Now, if you go and look at this fifth seal, that great tribulation, Jesus Christ, who was the greatest newscaster ever on this earth, I mean, after all, only God could forecast 2,000 years ago, the nuclear condition of this world today, and also other weapons of mass destruction. And he repeatedly talked about prophecies that clearly include nuclear bombs.
So there are a great many of these prophecies. You talked about Daniel there, the crisis at the close, the crisis of crises. But a bit later on in that program, Mr. Flurry just kind of listed and went over quickly some of these prophecies in the Bible. We'll listen to some of that now.
Listen to just a few of the prophecies about this. Jeremiah 4 and verse 7, the city shall be laid waste without an inhabitant. Is that pretty bad? Does that tell you that nuclear war is coming? Revelation 9 and verse 17 says third part of men are going to be killed in one sweeping part of this warfare. And then Joel 2 talks about in verse 2 through 6, a day of darkness and gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness. A fire devours before them. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them. There's never been a time like it says, but I'll just paraphrase another.
So, just some of those prophecies there about this coming nuclear war. Ones that demand our attention. In that program, Mr. Flurry announced a new booklet on nuclear Armageddon. Nuclear Armageddon is at the door. He announced that booklet back then. We have that booklet now. It was finished, I think, just back in the autumn. And in that booklet, he quoted from Winston Churchill in one part of it, where Churchill said, "Mankind has never been in this position before, without having improved appreciably in virtue or enjoying wiser guidance. It has got into its hands for the first time the tools by which it can unfailingly accomplish its own extermination, exactly as the Bible forecast." Mr. Flurry in that booklet notes, "If that is our ultimate accomplishment, isn't there something terribly wrong with man? And he still won't turn to God." This prophecy is obviously about nuclear warfare. And he was quoting from Matthew 24 at that point. Yet people say, "So what?" Will they have to experience before they say more than "so what?" If we won't listen to someone like Churchill, we surely ought to listen to Christ. Not one of his words will fail. But knowing that this was forecast, well, that's a key to understanding the hope here. Now, first of all, we need to see that this isn't a problem that we can fix ourselves. And Mr. Flory made that point on this Key of David as well.
So, if you look at this closely, you know, and if we're honest with ourselves, we know that men cannot solve this problem. Only God can solve it, and he's letting it go on until we learn some lessons from it. And this is really learning your lessons the hard way.
So we do have all of these problems, all of these nuclear problems. And only God can solve them. But they will be fixed. The same prophecies of your Bible that prophesied of nuclear weapons hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they tell us it will be fixed. We'll listen to just one final clip from that Key of David program now.
But the good news here is he's also giving us a little insight here in Matthew 24, verses 21 and 22, where he talks about the conclusion to the seventh seal, which is the return of Jesus Christ to this earth to stop all of this madness that would destroy all human flesh if Christ didn't return. All human life would be destroyed. So if you're going to have radical problems like this, you're going to have some radical changes to do something about it.
Only radical changes will help us fix this radical problem. But there is hope. So these same prophecies that talk about Christ coming. Mr. Flory in that Armageddon booklet, again, he writes, it's childish folly to think that anybody but Christ could stop this nuclear madness. He writes, so all this nuclear insanity is also a part of the sign of the second coming and the sign of the end of the age when Christ will save humanity from total extermination itself. This nuclear insanity that we see everywhere in the press, like I said, everything that we've quoted today, it all comes from just one day in the news. We live in an age of nuclear insanity. But like I said, there is good news. If you look in Matthew 24, it talks about Jesus Christ coming. Going back to that nuclear Armageddon booklet, Mr. Flory writes, Christ told us to watch. We cannot afford to be spiritually drowsy. He quotes Luke 21:36 from the Moffat, which says, from hour to hour, keep awake, praying that you may succeed in escaping all those dangers to come and in standing before the Son of Man. Matthew 24, in verse 46 and 47, it talks about Christ making those that do this, those that really watch, that are attuned and warning about what's happening, looking for Christ's return. He writes that he'll make those loyal people rulers over all his goods. Mr. Flory writes, that's a fantastic promise. The whole universe. Hebrews 2 states in one translation, I will give you control over the whole universe. Of course, before we could ever receive such a stupendous reward, Mr. Flory writes, we have to build godly character. He writes, we have to build godly character by keeping God's law. And he writes, out of billions of people, we have the unparalleled honor and opportunity of hearing God's warning, receiving his love and understanding his message. Can you wrap your minds around how wonderful those words of Christ really are? How do you contain yourself when you really understand it? This is uniquely wonderful, but it requires obedience. Jesus Christ told us to take heed and be ready. If we do, he will make us rulers over all his goods. And God has a lot of goods. So there is a whole lot of good news here as well. Left to himself, well, mankind would destroy himself. That's really what more and more of these experts are starting to see. But the Bible tells us that God won't leave man to himself. He will allow man to see how evil he really is. But he will step in before mankind does destroy himself. And he has a wonderful plan for mankind that includes the whole universe. The whole universe. Our free book, Nuclear Armageddon, is at the door. Like I said, it was published just a few months ago. It will take you through what the Bible prophesies about nuclear war. It will show you where the real danger is. I mean, we read some pretty good and insightful quotes today, But they don't know where the real danger is. You know, they see maybe danger in North Korea. They see danger from Russia and China. But you note the conclusions of those pieces that we read were generally vague. Well, the only thing we can be sure of is there'll be more of these situations like that, more times when we're worried about nuclear destruction. But they don't know exactly where the danger is. The Bible prophecy gives that with ringing clarity. And so you can read that our free book, Nuclear Armageddon is at the Door, talks about that as well. And it will help you prove it, take you through those scriptures so you can really prove that the Bible does talk about this time of nuclear Armageddon. And doing that, that will give you the hope beyond and show you what God's plan is through all of this. So that free book, you can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. If you go up in the top right at the banner at the top, we have a library button. Click there, go to booklets, and you can order that free book. We're more than happy to send it to you. You can read it online. We'll ship it to you anywhere in the world so that you can take that physical copy. It's always and read it in black and white on paper. Turning to your Bibles, looking at those scriptures. I said, we're more than happy to send that to you. And you can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. We'll take a short break. And when we get back, we'll look over some of the feedback from the show this week.
This is KPCG-FM. And this is The Trumpet Daily.
During his earthly ministry, Jesus Christ delivered his most pivotal prophecy while sitting on the Mount of Olives with his disciples. The discussion is recorded in Matthew 24. In this mind-staggering prophecy, Christ revealed that a series of crises would erupt on the world scene in the lead-up to his second coming. In fact, Christ prophesied that times would become so bad that unless he intervened, no flesh would be saved alive. To understand the signs leading up to the most wonderful news imaginable, the return of Christ, please request your free copy of Nuclear Armageddon is at the Door. To request the material online, visit our website, thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine.
The Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to The Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I did mention earlier we might talk some about Europe and the Middle East peace process. We'll skip that so that we have time for the feedback. Maybe I might pass that on to Mr. Flurry in case he wants to use some of that next week. Though we had the Owl Monitor had an article yesterday. Europe emerges as new sponsor of Middle East peace. So obviously something very important to keep an eye on there. Also an article from Carolyn Glick just talking about the major changes in the way the left in America view Israel. So maybe we'll get into some of that next week. But email feedback. The first I'll read, this is in response to Mr. Stephen Flurry's Trumpet brief that ran on Monday, German media despise Trump. And this is one from Germany. I think it's very interesting to get a perspective from Germany on this. This email states, many thanks once again for your newsletter. With regard to the content of today's message, I fully appreciate the issue as a resident of Germany. The news media, most of which declare openly that they are affiliated with CNN, have always been pro-Obama and pro-Clinton. They pick up every absurd rumor coming from the US media and serve it up anew. They have commentators that follow up on these stories with depreciating innuendo around the clock. There is absolutely no pro-Trump news. Indeed, the news that is provided is mostly along the lines of opinions more than substantiated facts. Like you mentioned, Trump is mostly described with a single-digit IQ. With regard to Obama and Clinton, I have always said that no one becomes the President of the United States by being stupid. All their actions and activities, irrelevant of how misinformed they might be, are well-calculated moves on the chessboard. Unfortunately, the same is true of German politicians. I guess they should spend some more time reading their Bibles, as the President of the United States claims to do. The only time my eyebrows disappeared under my hairline was, as you noted in the message, with regard to Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg, whom I considered more balanced than he has come across. In short, your message is spot on. So an account there of what the media is like in Germany. Another email here from the same Trumpet Brief. Thanks for the Trumpet Brief. It seems like it's not as big of a deal as it is, but this is a real problem. People were extremely negative towards George W. Bush too. They questioned his sanity and intelligence. What will be the result of all this negativity towards Donald Trump? There will be further action to follow all of this noise. Thanks again. Here's another one again from that... this is from that same Trumpet Brief. And this is, I've subscribed to the Trumpet recently, and I just want to let you know how pleased I am to receive the information you are sending me. It has opened my eyes about the real world that we are living in. I live in Lima, Peru, and I am very lucky that my parents sent me here to an American school, and consequently I'm able to watch and read all the worldwide updated information about what is really going on in our world today. Thanks very much, and blessings for all the Trumpet team. So there are messages going, reaching out all the way to Peru. We have another, a couple of quick responses from the Trumpet Brief I wrote on Tuesday. Is 2018 the year Europe falls apart? One is, we're told to watch and pray. We read that today even in this program. But we're told to watch and pray, and indeed we should, as God's people. And then another one from one of our regular listeners. Wow, I did not realize the extent of conflict and chaos that exists in so many nations. They could explode into civil wars and violence at any time. Thank you for writing about this. I gained a lot of information and knowledge that I did not have. That is why these Trumpet Briefs are so important. And then finally, one that in response to the program that Mr. Flohey gave talking about John Kerry, it writes, in my opinion, I always thought that Mr. Kerry had no respect for this country or its foundational beliefs of our forefathers. I am of his generation and went to college in his hometown of Waltham. Thanks for continuing news updates and perspectives. And that one was from Massachusetts. Well, there's still a few minutes left, but I think we'll start wrapping up a little bit early. We've got Trumpet Hour coming up soon. I'll be recording for that in just a few minutes, so stay around, listen to that, and keep listening on KPCG. That's 101.3 on the FM dial.